Hello, everybody. This is Jace from the Comic Source Podcast, and I have someone here who wants to share a very special message with all you listeners.
Hi, everybody. This is Kelly Dale. If you don't know me, you might have heard a previous podcast that I did with Jace, and we talked about the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus. Well, I just want to get a heads up to everyone, all the fans out there. The omnibus itself, the Kickstarter went well. We are completely funded. So yay, this means the omnibus is actually going to happen. Now, if you happen to miss out on the Kickstarter and you still want an omnibus, there will be a handful still available. So just send me an email, let me know. I will be at Heroes Con, which is in June in Charlotte, with the omnibuses. So if you have, already backed it and want to pick it up there, or if you would like to be there and pick one up, then I'll definitely be there. I'm also going to be at Dragon Con here in Atlanta over Labor Day weekend. And again, I still may have a few omnibuses left. So thank you everyone for all of your support. It's amazing. The omnibus itself is going to the printers on Monday and it's all going well. So thank you.
All right, listeners, I want to extend my thank you as well. I can't really remember supporting a Kickstarter, being involved with a Kickstarter that went so well. 5 stretch goals. It really exceeded my expectations, and I'm so happy for Kelly and that Jeremy's work is still going to be out there inspiring people, making people smile, for you to all enjoy it. So I add my thanks to Kelly's. And if you have any questions, you can email Kelly. Go back and listen to the previous podcast. We promoted it on the Comic Source for quite a while, so all the details are there. I'll also put the details in the show notes for this episode, so if you want to contact Kelly, have any questions, the details will all be there. So thanks for coming on, Kelly, and giving everyone an update.
No problem. Thanks for having me back, and again, thank you to everyone.
Yep, definitely. Okay, everybody, take care.
Bye.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. It's time for another Top Cow Thursday episode, and I have a real treat for you listeners. We're going to be talking about the Warframe comic, and I know that it has a huge fan base. For those not familiar, it's a free-to-play mobile game, and I actually have one of the writers for Warframe joining me, and he's going to tell us all about the book. So I want to welcome Ryan Caddy to the show. Ryan, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Excited to be here. Real quick, actually, it's not, I don't know where that misconception keeps coming up in comics Twitter and stuff. It's not a mobile game. It's Steam and console and stuff. It's really weird. You're like the fourth comics coverage person to say it's a mobile game. I think some weird press release early on is probably like,
yeah, that's exactly where I saw it.
I don't want to be obnoxious and correct you or anything, but I'm like, wow, I'm like, where does this keep coming from? It's wacky.
No, I mean, we want to be as accurate as we can. So, okay, yeah, that's great. So, for those not familiar, why don't you tell us a little bit about the game, and then we'll transition into talking about the actual kind of background story of the Warframe world.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So Warframe has been around for a while, actually. It's an older game that's gotten a lot of like really consistent, fabulous updates. They've done a really amazing job of keeping it playable over the years and making it always feel like topical and good to like a modern player base. But the premise, like the elevator pitch I always say to people is, well, you get to be a space ninja, which is sort of just like the easy go-to of what the game is. But the idea is that, in the far future, the galaxy is very much divided among these crumbling remnants of forces that have ruled the galaxy. There used to be this vast, powerful group called the Orokin and their empire, and they were basically, future human inheritors, and they had fantastic technology, like really miraculous stuff. And they were basically, through their own hubris and some enemies, were taken down and their empire fell apart. And you play in Warframe as these Tenno, who are these like powerful futuristic warriors with all sorts of weapons and powers and like really just like dynamic moves and abilities. And the whole premise is that you Tenno, your Warframes, are all about bringing balance to this galaxy that's sort of slowly been crumbling apart through all these little kind of carrion forces and factions.
So is the world, I mean, would you say it's like a dystopian science fiction-y future? Is that kind of a, I know that's generalizing very much.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, there's like definitely huge elements of dystopia there. I mean, like if we look at the largest factions of enemies you see, like the Grineer and the Corpus are like the two biggest enemy factions you see the most. And the Grineer are basically like, they're a really strong empire, but they're made up of like the descendants of slave clones from the Orokin era. And so they're just like genetically more and more tainted. And they're just sort of like crumbling and scavenging tech. And then there's the one of the other more powerful factions that you have to fight against are the Corpus, who are just like, they worship profit, you know, and they've got all sorts of cybernetic enhancements and stuff. So there's definitely a lot of those dystopian tropes and elements. But, you know, it's so vast, it's hard to... I think what a lot of dystopian sci-fi has is a much smaller scope. We're looking at like one planet or, you know, like one civilization. And in Warframe, I mean, you go to like every planet in the galaxy and more. And you see remnants of this old civilization. And you, as a player with access to tremendous power, see how, even if it's maybe dystopian, elements of the world that are on the come up and on the rise and bringing that balance and peace.
Yeah, that's actually the next thing that I was going to ask you about. So coming in as a writer to a kind of an already established world, I mean, that had to be, I imagine, a bit intimidating, but also like really, really cool, right? Because it's such a vast, rich kind of universe that they've built, right? And you can go in a lot of different directions. I imagine for you and Matt, it was kind of like, well, what do we want to pull from? Where do we want to go first, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely, it's so big, their world, and they've been working on it for so long. It's not like, you know, I've done other licensed work before, and a lot of times with like licensed video game comics, you know, it's a lot of like, okay, like one game is out or two games are out and you're jumping on with like a new release or whatever. Whereas with this, Warframe has been out for so long. They've been doing so many updates and building on their mythology so heavily. It's like you said, it's where to step in. And I mean, luckily, you know, we worked very closely with the story team and devs on what they wanted and what topics they wanted touched on. But it's amazing the amount of like, there's just so with such a richness of lore, even like little things as like, oh man, what weapons should we give this character? Let's talk about it and figure out why it would make sense in this sequence, you know?
Was their story team really excited to have Top Cow put out a comic set in this world?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they, you know, Matt ended up bringing me on just to co-write it with him. One, because I'd actually played the game a little bit before Top Cow, the deal happened. But also just because me and him have been working together for a while on random things at Top Cow and stuff. But he, they had explicitly wanted to work with him because I know they, I think that a couple of the people at Digital Extremes, the Warframe company, knew Matt from other like comic deals, and maybe The Darkness, I'm pretty sure, had something to do with some of those executives, the video game. But they also, they were just like Think Tank and the Aphrodite books and that scope of like heavy, expansive sci-fi that also still kind of feels real and personal. Which I had also done a little work with Matt on before, some of the Aphrodite stuff, so it sort of fit.
So once they got Matt, then Matt brought you on, and then you got in a room, talk story, and they were just really jazzed to see it in print.
Yeah, I mean, really early meetings were like really great because the, you know, the guy, kind of the mastermind behind Warframe, Steve Sinclair, he was like, I really want to do, like, he'd be like, oh, I really want to do this thing, like a Kurosawa thing. And, you know, me and Matt would be in there and we'd be talking and we'd be like, oh, like this scene from Seven Samurai. And we'd be like, yes, this, let's, you know, it was very, especially, you know, the early days was so like just like relentlessly excited because they're so jazzed about their world and there's so much to pull from. It's nothing but like positivity about like the paradox of choice is like the problem is not, man, how do we make this work? It's ooh, which way should we make this work?
Right. You know? Exactly. Let's get into a little bit of the details of the world. So
yeah, absolutely.
The game is called Warframe.
Yes.
But really that's more of a generic term, right? For the way I understand it, for the space ninjas themselves, right? Is that?
Yeah. So that right? The Tenno and the Warframes, it's sort of an interchangeable term, kind of. There are complex lore reasons that I don't want to go into because there's actually a really amazing like buildup of information that gets revealed to the player as the game goes on. And by the time you reach, I mean, with a game like Warframe, it's weird to say end game because there's so much content and there's so much more than just the base story mode. But sort of once you get through a large amount of the story missions, you learn a lot of interesting things about what are the Tenno and what are the Warframes and why are those terms interchangeable, but also why are they not? What is more to these powerful soldiers that you can control? Awesome. But there's a lot of like lore secrets that we don't want to give away because a lot of veteran players have a feeling of like earning that secret lore world building stuff.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you want to get that. You want to play up to that level. You want to earn it. You want to be able to experience it for yourself. We're certainly not looking to spoil anything. Let's talk a little bit more about the factions themselves. So,
sure.
You talked about the Tenno. And in your story that you're telling, we kind of see one show up and really kind of as the protagonist, kind of the hero, but we don't really know that much about him. And is that because again you don't want to give too much away for you know the kind of the perspective of the telling or having someone play the game?
Yeah, I mean that's a big part of it. There's a lot of elements of when you play the game, especially early days, this idea of the Tenno as silent protagonists. But as time goes on, you really sort of see a development to these warriors you control. And I think as the comic issues go on, we do sort of tap into that, not necessarily giving away any of those lore elements at all, but sort of like the idea that there's more to these silent protagonists. They're not just robots. There's a personality, there's a an honor and a behavior there, consciousness, and just the idea. Also, we were all just really jazzed about this idea of like this, you know, silent samurai Kurosawa warrior who like strolls into town with, you know, sort of a mysterious past and a mysterious motives, who's just there to do the right thing and fight the final battle, you know, especially for that first issue.
Yeah, just real quick to give you my perspective as a reader. So
sure.
I'm not really into video games much anymore, but you know, certainly very much into comics. I wasn't that familiar with Warframe until I actually saw it. You guys talked about it at the Top Cow panel at San Diego Comic Con last year. And so obviously, it's you, it's Matt, so it's Top Cow. So I picked it up, I read it, and I like right away from I'm like, okay, who's this like Tenno guy? Like he's not saying anything, and immediately I just want to know. It just pulled me into the story. It's like I have to keep reading because I want to know who this guy is, because he looks, not only does he look badass, he's kicking everybody's butt. So just my
kind of
my Warframe layman opinion there. So
well, and I know that's, I mean, with books like this, that's always the question, right? I mean, who is this for, right? Is this accessible to people who've never played the game before? Is it accessible to new fans of the game? Is it accessible to veterans? And I mean, that's always a tightrope. It's always a tightrope finding that balance and how much to reveal, how much to exposit, what kind of in jokes, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and the antagonist in the book series, the Grineer, is who we, you know, meet early on as kind of the foil for the Tenno or the Warframe. And what I find interesting there is that, again, it's probably hard to balance how much to reveal, you know, and again, you know, trying to find your audience, because at the end of the day, to make a compelling villain, even though they're doing terrible things, you still have to have a point of reference for the reader, right?
Absolutely.
So can you talk a little bit about the challenge of you know, bringing that across in the comic story?
Definitely. I mean, you know, and that's an interesting point, especially like, you know, how much do we want to dump lore on readers who maybe aren't familiar with the world, but also make the Grenier, like, why are they not just generic bad guys? And I think for me, the answer is that ever since I've played the game, the character of Captain Vor, who is the leader of the Grenier that you meet in the comic, who is kind of one of the main antagonists of the game as well, is to me is like, there's like an element of like tragic, almost Shakespearean military heroism to him. And I make this joke a lot when I'm talking to Warframe fans, but very sincerely, I say that I write him as the hero. And when I'm writing his pages and when Matt and I are talking about like what to do for his beats and going over, and we even say this to the Warframe people, it's like, look, we want to write him as sympathetic as you could write this space fascist, you know?
Right.
So I think that's like a big good point of reference, and a lot of the kind of how you fit them into tropes people understand, but also use those not as like railroads, but as tools, you know, to tack on like a skeleton. Like we have a lot of scenes in the first few issues where he is giving a lot of like rousing dictatorial speeches, but we'll also do narrative caps for him where we're seeing what he's feeling as he's talking and getting a sense that there's more to this villain and his motives and his place in this larger Grenier machine.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like, you know, it, not to fall back on a cliche, but you know, everybody's kind of the hero of their own story. And
absolutely.
And, you know, as somebody coming in from the outside, not being that familiar with Warframe, it's like, okay, well, I kind of get the sense that the Warframe, that the Tenno is the hero, and you know, this Captain Vor who's leading this army is the villain. But at the same time, I don't necessarily know all the motivations. And you know, you talk about in the story about just the Grenier are trying to, you know, kind of perpetuate themselves. They're just trying to survive, you know. And I think that
absolutely
we can all relate to that, right?
Yeah, and there's definitely a notion of as within the game and also very on a micro level within the book, this idea that like the Tenno with all this tremendous power and access to ancient wisdom, and you know, they have this woman, the Lotus, who is a very powerful entity who kind of commands them and tells them where to go and what to do, and that it's sort of being, in the Grenier's eyes, wasted on these notions of balance, whereas the Grenier believe they could bring like pure order. You know, I really try, especially with Vor, but with the Grenier in general, to bring this mindset of like, look at how wasteful everyone else is because they're not bringing order to a galaxy that used to have order, you know, step beyond balance, totalitarian control, I guess. Control.
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about. And what's funny is it's been coming up a lot recently in episodes we've done. We did an episode on Toyo Harada. And that's kind of that's kind of
awesome.
his thing. And then I don't know if you're familiar at all with Michael Morrissey's recent book, Black Star Renegades.
I am very familiar with Black Star Renegades. And Mike's a good friend. He's a great guy.
Yeah, so that's the same kind of idea there, right? Like, hey, we're gonna, you know, control everything because we want total peace, you know, but it's at the expense of freedom. So I see the Grenier kind of on that same level.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I try not to dive too deep into the cliches because it's a zeitgeist, but Star Wars is like my favorite thing in the world. So, you know, like Vor isn't quite a Tarkin, but he's a little more noble than an Orson Krennic.
Right.
But that same sort of like ladder climbing dedication to the military entity.
Let's talk a little bit about kind of the ancient history of this world. You mentioned the Orokin Empire itself. Is that in the game and in the story you're telling, is that kind of always, what's the best way to put this? Kind of the background, like the mythical, we long for the great days and empires of yesteryear. Is that kind of the purpose that it serves in the story?
Yes and no. The Orokin, very interestingly, like there's definitely a lot of characters in the game and in the books feel that way, and there's a lot of people who are sort of scavengers, right? Like the Ostrons, who are sort of like your civilian humans on Earth. They're very much depicted in game and in the book as scavengers who find old Orokin artifacts and sell them or rework them and stuff, although there's a lot more to them than that. That's sort of a a stereotype for them. But also, you know, as much as all these factions are battling for ancient Orokin tech or misusing it or whatever, there's this sense, and you feel it very prevalently as you get further into the lore and the story and see how the Lotus, who guides your Tenno around, kind of feels about the Orokin, what they did, that they're, the Orokin got kind of bad at the end, as often happens with these sort of like golden agey societies. You know, their hubris can consume them. And that's, I think, why it's so important that your character, your Tenno, your warrior, isn't fighting for control, but rather just a sense of balance. Because this idea that moral absolutism and like an entity with absolute power will inevitably corrupt itself, if only from the act of a few specific entities inwardly.
Kind of a human failing almost, or I mean, I know these aren't necessarily, you know, humans as a species, but it's a very common theme throughout fiction. Little too big for your britches, crumbling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Its own weight. Let's shift gears and go back to talking about crafting a tale in a world that's already so established in another media. We already talked about the challenge of, okay, so where do we pull from? Where do we start? Because obviously you can't cover everything in a limited number of pages in a comic. But what are some of the other challenges of you know, telling a story in a world that's you know, already so well established?
I mean, just the immediate problem is just the amount of people who are going to be involved. You know, the amount of approvals that need necessary. You know, me and Matt get a sense of what's happening, what needs to be the story ideas they want, or we pitch an idea and we're on the same page and we go through, and some people like it or some people don't. And it's because, you know, world's that big, you know, there's not one steward, right? There's multiple people, there's developers and story teams. So it's the idea of even when people can agree on the broader strokes, absolutely. It's what is acceptable? What tones do we want? What feels right? And, you know, sort of especially bringing outsiders into that sort of temporary workplace culture and getting a feel for navigating their priorities. Because, you know, I play the game and I might really like one aspect of the lore and I really want to explore this. But, you know, from the perspective of the developers, it might be something they're saving for later, or it might be something they want to keep mysterious, or even it might have not overall tested well and they don't want to explore it. It might be done, you know, that sort of thing, all sorts of stuff like that.
I didn't even think about it. It's almost like too many cooks in the kitchen at speak.
Like there was all sorts of things early on where this is like, you know, the pre-writing pitching stage, where we'd get an idea and it would, you know, make a couple rungs up the ladder, and then, you know, you get to the people, the big bosses, and you'd learn that this idea doesn't actually work because of something that someone way up top had in mind for a year down the line. And, you know, nobody knows because it's secret and it's early stages, but we can't do this thing in the comic because it doesn't fit, because something will eventually come out that'll contradict it. So it's fitting your niche into the big story priorities and serving that lore rather than making it all by yourself. Because, you know, I feel like a lot of properties, if you're talking about like Marvel and DC, or even like our work with at Top Cow, like when, you know, me and Teeny did Magdalena and things like that, it's a lot of like, how can I get my story in the universe? How can I wrest control over the pieces I want and make it happen and make it fit? Whereas with a lot of licensed properties like this, especially something like Warframe that has so many dedicated fans and has like a strong culture of what needs to be told and what is cool and what people want, is more of like serving that and telling your story within that rather than wresting control away at all.
Right. Just trying to fit it in seamlessly. And
it's more humbling.
Sanding down those seams and making sure that it all fits has got to be really challenging.
Yeah, exactly.
So would you say that when you and Matt finally kind of had the idea, got all the approval from everybody, do you feel like that you're crafting a tale for those familiar with the game, or is it more reaching a new audience? Where do you think it fits?
You know, I mean, ultimately the goal is that anybody should be able to pick it up and find something they love about it. I think, you know, there are always going to be parts of it that only veterans can really appreciate. But I think in terms of broad strokes and in the stories we're trying to tell, anyone who's read the first issue, you know, I mean, you can pick up that first issue and there's definitely elements of mystery there and things that might not be absolutely 100% clear for every little lore aspect. But I think it's hopefully if we did our job right, it's approachable enough that, you know, read it and you're like, oh, this is cool. I don't know anything about the game, but I like this. I can appreciate these themes and these characters and these cool visuals and moments. And maybe that makes you want to play the game. And then you come back to the comic with a newfound understanding on the things that you previously thought were rad, but now you see like a depth to them and a connection.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you do it that way, you're really getting more value because, you know, you read the story first time, it's cool. You go play the game, mm-hmm. you come back and get so much more out of it. You get a reread and with new eyes almost. It's almost like reading a new comic again.
Exactly. And the game's free to play. So, I mean, that's a big part of our mindset too, is that, you know, anyone can just pick up the game and play, you know, I mean, there are obviously like currencies in game that you can spend money on and stuff like that, but really it's not a pay to win game. It's perfectly accessible for just anybody who likes an action shooter RPG.
So what would you say, and this doesn't necessarily have to be just in the first issue, but maybe in the series overall, what would you say that, you and Matt specifically wanted to put into the story to make it relatable to someone who's not familiar with the Warframe world?
I mean, the sort of like easy cop-out answer is that the little Ostron girl from the first issue, Mitsuki, is, you know, she is not super familiar with the elaborate, complicated lore aspects of this world. So she, you know, can serve as an entry point for the audience to relate to her and sort of get caught up. But I think that's, you know, that's always more of like a tool and a trope than anything super real. And so I think for people who haven't played the game, right? I think diving in, what we're giving them is this notion of like the sense of what the tone and culture of this world is all about. I think the broad strokes of the plot are accessible to anybody. But I think it's more this idea that, wow, there's something more here. It's a single snapshot of a larger world. And all the characters you see are single figures that are part of a much broader cast, and getting an idea of their different voices and perspectives can really help people see that, you know, every little thing they might like. I mean, ideally, someone who's never played Warframe would read the book, and maybe they're even skeptical and they're like, I don't really need to play another game, but maybe they, you know, we have, you know, this one character who's kind of like a roguish junker trader, you know, almost almost a gun for hire scavenger type person named Little Duck. And, you know, maybe, you know, they're sort of skeptical, but they see this character and they read about her and they see what she is like. And they're like, oh, I actually didn't know how much the cool stuff like this existed in the game. This is awesome. Now I really want to play the game. Now I really want to explore and step in and see more about it. You know, just different unexpected tidbits for people who had maybe preconceived notions.
And it almost sounds like, in a way, the fact that it's a game is kind of irrelevant. I mean, if someone's not familiar with the world, the way to pull them in, and from what you're describing, is you just tell a good story and you create interesting characters, and that's what's really gonna pull the people in, right?
That is always the goal.
So what's your favorite thing about creating in this world that's been established already by the Warframe developers and story people?
You know, I mean, it's gonna sound corny, but honestly, it's interacting with fans of the game and seeing that they like stuff. Like, you know, every once in a while, we'll do our best to include an in-joke. Like, I'll go on the Warframe subreddit, and I'll see what they're talking about, what they're into, how they feel about certain characters and things, and just dropping little references or Easter eggs, or, you know, seeing how they react to them and seeing people catch them is, like, really, it's, like, really exhilarating, because as, like a big old lifetime nerd to be able to, like, do for these people what other authors and creators have done for me with properties that I love is like, super... It's rad as hell. It's an amazing feeling. And sort of the reverse of that is like new ideas, you know, elements that we put into the comic that maybe were aspects of the lore but hadn't quite shown up in the game, and seeing players respond to these newer elements of the world that they're not super familiar with, but like get into them and get excited about them is super gratifying. That we could make a mark on their lore is just, I mean, it's awesome to be able to have that privilege.
Well, that actually leads me into my next question. And I was going to ask you, how much feedback have you had from the Warframe community? Does it tend to be, I mean, are people digging it?
Yeah, it's all, honestly, I always joke at cons. I say the Warframe fans are very good to me. because you know, overwhelmingly every conversation has been positive. There's one bad interaction I have, and it's such a joke that when I tell it to Warframe fans I meet, they think it's so funny. It was at San Diego Comic-Con when we were giving away the free version of issue one. And I had this, I was just signing, and this guy comes up to me, we're just talking about Warframe. He's excited about the book, and a super pleasant guy, like normal dude, really, really good conversation. We're just talking, hanging out. We're talking about the book, talking about the game a little bit. And he goes, cool. And he goes, so what frame have you been maining lately? What have you been working on, leveling up, grinding? And I go, oh, well, you know, I kind of, you know, launched into my little like spiel about how like I don't get as much time to play as I used to. I'm very busy with work and I can't grind every day, but you know, blah, blah, blah. And I basically, I told him that there was this specific type of Warframe that I'd been working on that I really just was having fun with that was not like in the meta, not the ideal, popular, powerful frame to use. And I was like, oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. But I've been working on, its name is Nidus. And I'm like, I've really been having fun with Nidus. And I say that, and the guy who's been perfectly cordial, polite this whole time, he goes, oh. And he's holding his issue. And he says, oh. And he just leaves. He just walked away from me, and it was so baffling. It was the only bad interaction I've ever had with a Warframe fan. It was so cartoonish, and I'm just like, I like to imagine that guy like went on the subreddit later and was like, don't buy this book, these guys don't even play with good frames, they don't know what they're talking about, amateur hour in here. Every time I tell that story to Warframe fans, they laugh so hard, they get such a kick out of it. This like weird caricature of a person only at San Diego Comic-Con, right, would have interaction with someone like that.
Now, did he put his signed copy down and walk away, or did he at least take the?
No, he still took it. I mean, like, honestly, you know, it's the kind of thing where he realistically was probably just like, oh, okay, I don't. He probably just didn't like the frame and didn't want to have a bad interaction with me, and probably was just like left because it was awkward. But in my head, it was like comic book guy, you know, like, oh, worst frame ever, and just like bail, you know, like get out of my face. But he took the comic, so I won. Really, yes, hopefully Jason. I'm the winner.
Yeah, hopefully he's still reading. One last thing I wanted to ask you about the book. So the art how does that work? Because I know like it's art from the game in a way, or the game's art team, are they the ones providing the art? I mean, it's not like a, you know, a traditional work process between a comic writer and the artist, right?
Actually, it's really interesting. We're working with a studio, and it's not actually connected to the game at all. It's this the studio called Studio Hive. I believe they operate out of Malaysia. Topcat's worked with them on several properties before, but it's a really nice bunch of artists, and they're just a whole team. And so it's different people doing different aspects of the process, much like an animation studio would be, or an art studio for film or whatever. And so it's not necessarily assembled like a traditional comic book with a penciler, an inker, a colorist, etc. It's you know, this group of people kind of like passing it around and making it work, but in a way that makes the finished product look a lot more like a video game. Fans have been really responsive to it, and you know, people seem really excited by how much it can look like, evoke the game's imagery without being, you know, too heavily rendered and modeled and not look like a comic anymore. And then the covers tend to be done by this artist, Kevin Glint, who has done a few cool concept works for Warframe before.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous to work at, to look at, I should say. So being that it's a studio, though, there's still, and it's not, you know, one or two artists working on it, there's still kind of the back and forth. Like if something comes back, it doesn't look quite like you expected, that, you know, they're open to that, or sometimes they're coming up with ideas that are even better than what you originally thought. Does that kind of thing still happen?
Yeah, actually, yeah, it's surprising how much it's so similar to working with just a single art team. It's just we talk to the studio manager and it, you know, and occasionally deal with specific artists, but normally it comes off just like working with any other art team. It's been really fantastic. I feel really lucky to get to work with those guys.
Cool. That's great. That's great. And the book is really, really good. I mean,
thank you.
I know that, I have a lot of Top Cow listeners that tune in for Top Cow Thursdays. I know you guys love the Artifact Corner. I know you love Think Tank and the whole Edenverse. But do yourself a favor and check out Warframe, because, just cause it's a licensed book, just cause it's based on a video game doesn't mean it's not quality. You know, I mean, Matt's a great writer. Ryan is definitely, I feel like, one of the up and comers. Do yourself a favor and check it out. And now, Ryan, I wonder if there's anything else you want to share with our listeners, any other upcoming projects or things you're working on?
Well, I'm working on, I've also been at Top Cow. I've been sort of co-writing / editing / script doctoring, helping out with the Glitch books, which is Dissonance and Bonehead. I don't actually have anything to do with God Complex, but those are those beautiful, gorgeous, sort of not plot connected but thematically connected books licensed by Studio Glitch Studio based on toys. I'm sure Top Cow fans have seen them around. Paul Jenkins writes God Complex.
Yeah, that book is
Brian Hill. Oh, sorry, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say that God Complex. I'm really enjoying. I love Bonehead. I haven't checked out Dissonance yet, but I love God Complex too. But because I love Paul Jenkins, but man. It's like, if you want to get your value and money's worth out of a book, read God Complex, because that's a book you have to read like 3 or 4 times. It's so deep. There's so much there.
God Complex is amazing. I mean, Paul Jenkins, right? I mean, he's brilliant. So, of course the finished product would rock, but, yeah, God Complex is amazing. I really love Bonehead. I stepped on to help out with issues 3 and 4 of Bonehead. So those I don't think are out. Yeah, I think 3's out. Bonehead's awesome. It's you know, obviously with Brian Hill handling the main writing, he is also a freaking genius. So it's got that really cool, like, I don't know how to describe it. Its vibe is kind of like almost cyber. It's very cyberpunk. It's got like a very fast vibe to it. I love that book. And then Dissonance, the one that I sort of co-write, help out with the most, is very, it's a little more like bizarre, esoteric. It's got a lot of like almost aristocratic vibes, but Sammy Bosri's art on it is amazing, and the character designs are really, really interesting. So I'm helping out with those, that whole series, and then I have a couple other irons in the fire. One specifically at Top Cow that I will probably be talking about more formally as we get closer to San Diego Comic Con, but I don't want to reveal too many secrets about it just yet, but suffice to say, I'm getting an art. I'm working with an artist who is currently done, who's done some pretty popular current Top Cow books and has worked at a lot of other companies. Just some really rad sci-fi horror stuff. I'm jazzed about. So,
well, cool. We'll have to, once the official announcement is made, we'll have to have you back on to talk about it.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. I'd love to. And you know me, man, I love to come on and yammer about stuff. I hopefully have not undersold Warframe for the diehard vet fans out there.
No, I mean, if anything, I'm even more jazzed. It's like, okay, I need the next issue now after hearing you talk about it.
All right.
So if any of our listeners want to follow along social media, so they know when you have books coming out or projects you have coming up, where's the best place to follow along with your work?
Yeah, I mean, Twitter is the best place to follow me for all my work. I'm just at Rye Cady, RYCADY. And I think that's my Instagram too, but Instagram is like 90% pictures of me eating really gross food and just absurd novelty confections and things that normal humans don't need to watch. But that and Twitter is sort of, Twitter's my main sort of comics focused social media vomit.
Great. If you listeners that want to follow Ryan, I'll be sure and put a link to his Twitter in the show notes. So once again, I want to thank Ryan for joining me.
Yeah. Thank you so much, man. Thanks for having me on. Anytime. I love coming on and talking to you guys. And I love the Top Cow Thursday thing is so cool. The dedication that you've brought to Top Cow, especially is from someone who's worked with them for so long is it's really awesome, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh,
I'm sure everybody at the company does too.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that because, I'm really, and I was talking to Matt about this earlier today. In fact, I'm a big believer there's a comic out there for everybody, and I'm just trying to match everybody up with the right comic so they can fall in love with the medium. And a Top Cow books are a great place to start. You know, things like the Artifact Corner of the Universe, things like Warframe, a Think Tank, Postal. Yeah. These are quality books, and I'm just trying to get the word out.
Well, we certainly appreciate it, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so listeners, don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure and check out all the other coverage of pop culture, TVs, movies, video games, all that kind of great stuff. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those platforms. All three places, I always announce when new episodes come out. And it's a great place to follow us for convention coverage as well. So once again, thanks for joining us, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks.